At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
We are going to travel again. The only question is when and who. We'll do some jobs market as well, and we will talk steel. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today, the 16th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. A very quick, you got to take things in context note to get us going today, the theme of which is what seems initially not great might not actually be not great. I speak here, briefly, I promise, of retail sales, the February report on which we got this morning. Down 3% from January was the number. And y'all know the consumers are everything in this economy because we tell it to you all the time. So that might be alarming, that drop. But fear not for the prospects of a continued recovery. Number one, February is usually slow for retail sales anyway. Number two, B, January sales were revised upward by a lot. And C, there were those storms last month that kind of threw a wrench into things as well. So the drop, not so bad, is what I'm saying. Oh, also, those relief checks are coming, and people will be spending at least part of those. So there you go. Maybe they will be spending it on travel. The Transportation Security Administration screened more than 1.2 million people yesterday, the fifth day in a row over 1.2. And airlines are reporting more bookings as well as more people get vaccinated. Leisure, yes, sure, people want to go places. But might business travel be coming back too? Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
There are a lot of people who cannot wait to get on an airplane again, to see family or friends, or just go somewhere new. And a growing number are, says Victoria Walker at The Points Guy.
We're starting to see more and more travelers saying since they've been vaccinated, they feel more comfortable going to see family. They feel more comfortable taking a vacation to the Caribbean.
And apparently traveling for work, too. According to a survey by the Global Business Travel Association, nearly half of airlines and hotels say bookings for corporate travel are up.
This is a good sign.
Suzanne Neufung is CEO of the association. She says executives are telling her they're ready.
I've heard from lots of senior leaders that they have missed the culture building aspect of being with their teams around the world in a physical space.
Plus, she says, once one company starts sending people out again,
I can almost guarantee it that if your competitor is sending people out to make those sales calls, that you will soon be doing the same thing.
That would be great news for airlines. Business travelers tend to pay higher fares and travel more often, says industry analyst Henry Hardeveld.
And they're more likely to buy the optional products that airlines sell, whether it's an extra legroom seat, a beer on the plane, priority boarding, or whatever else.
But Hardeveld says the rebound will probably take a couple of years. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Along the lines that Sam was just talking about, more people going more places, here is a not irrelevant question. How are we going to know somebody's had their shots or not? The European Union is proposing something called a digital green pass so people who are vaccinated can move more freely. Israel's already doing something similar, and President Biden is looking into some kind of vaccine certificate. But as Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports, there are questions, economic, ethical, and otherwise.
Family vacation in Italy? Business trip to China? No problem. Just show me your COVID vaccine certificate. This might be the future. Glenn Melnick is a health economist at USC.
I think it would certainly speed up the recovery of those sectors that have been slowed down or shut down because of risk of exposure to COVID.
Many worry about creating an underclass of unvaccinated people who also can't travel. Wafa El-Sadr at the Columbia Mailman School of Public Health says the U.S. still has a lot of work to do.
I'm hopeful that if there's a true commitment in this country to equity, that we would be able to reach a point where we have been able to overcome the very real barriers that people are facing now in accessing vaccination.
And if it's going to happen, Jennifer Nuzzo at Johns Hopkins University says there needs to be universal verification systems.
You are requiring countries to show proof of having provided something that is very hard to get, that can create incentives for perhaps not being completely transparent about what's actually going on.
As other countries start to experiment with vaccine credentials, Americans who want to travel may have to participate. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
With profound apologies to Samuel Beckett, traders on Wall Street today, mostly just waiting for Jay Powell. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. As I said a minute ago, the Federal Reserve has wrapped up day one of a two-day confab on the state of this economy. Notice I did not say they are meeting on interest rates because they are not going to raise them. That's about as sure a thing in this economy as you can come up with right now. But Chair Powell's every syllable will be scrutinized for what he and the gang might be thinking about inflation. Also, with the American Rescue Plan, now law, there will probably also be talk of some of the crisis-fighting programs the Fed rolled out almost a year ago now when we weren't quite sure what other kinds of relief might be coming. The Federal Reserve's municipal bond-buying program was one of those tools. Only the New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority and the famously cash-strapped and near-junk bond status state of Illinois were borrowers. Susana Mendoza took over as controller at the height of Illinois' budget crisis back in 2016.
For us, borrowing from the Federal Reserve was actually the best rate that we could have possibly gotten. If we had gone to the market because of our poor credit right now, we would have gotten significantly higher rates. So it was a good deal for us. We took advantage of it, and I'm thankful that it was there.
Since you mentioned rates, and I don't want to climb on the inflation bandwagon here because it's still very much in doubt, but how worried are you about all the pent-up demand and all the consumer money that's going to come climbing into this economy once we hopefully get through the end of this thing? And now with the federal relief that's out there, is inflation and some kind of crunch along those lines a thing that you're worrying about?
Well, I feel that so far we have already said, and I have just keep saying this over and over, that we do not see this stimulus money or this relief money as a windfall for Illinois. I'm telling everyone who will listen that, you know, don't get excited about this money coming into Illinois, especially the legislature. As you know, sometimes the legislature hears that there's new money and they already have many ideas of how they'd like to spend it. But that money is essentially spoken for. It will be put towards paying back our borrowing. And the most important thing to keep in mind here is that when we talk about these new dollars coming in to Illinois, we're not getting all of that $7.5 billion in one hit.
We should say this is money from the American Rescue Plan that the president just signed.
Yeah, that's right. And so Illinois is supposed to get about $7.5 billion. We're going to see about $3.75 billion come in within the next 60 days. And then the other half of that will not come in until next year towards the end of the fiscal year. So, you know, again, this is not Christmas, right? Your mom and dad aren't sending us a check for our birthday. We have a very targeted, responsible approach to how we're going to spend this. I believe we're making all the right moves. And hopefully, as vaccinations continue to move in the right direction, we can get people back to work. Hopefully, conventions can come back into Illinois here, which are a huge part of our economy. And that will all be instrumental in injecting some vitality into our finances as well.
As we know, Chicago in the spring and fall is lovely. I don't know about summer and winter, but
it is the best city in the world.
That's a whole different deal. Look, I got one more question for you. Let me get out of sort of the Illinois mindset here, if I could. I want you to think big picture for me. You have been deep in the thickets of extremely partisan budget battles in your state for five-ish years now, right? I wonder what you make of the national partisanship over this economy right now. As you know, back in the thicket of the crisis in March and April of last year, a lot of Democrats voted for relief plans, and now we have Republicans to a person saying, no, they're not gonna. And I wonder what you make of our fiscal future with those as the ground rules.
You know, I think it's just so disappointing. And this should not be a partisan issue, helping blue states and red states and purple states. I mean, I don't know at what point we forgot that this is the United States of America. And all of us, every single nook and cranny that you will find in this country has been impacted by COVID-19. And we just want to help them. And so it's unfortunate that this partisanship continues. But all I can tell you is we can't control what happens in Washington, but we can certainly control what happens here in Illinois. And we're doing the best we can to help everyone, regardless of where they fall on the political spectrum.
Susana Mendoza is the controller of the great state of Illinois. Ms. Mendoza, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You get up tomorrow morning, you got your coffee, you got your tea, beverage of choice. You want to find out what's going on in the world? Fire up the stream, turn on the radio. David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. Check it out. There has been, as you might have heard, a wave of violence and racism against Asian Americans the past number of months. And that comes against a backdrop of economic harm as well. As we have been talking about a lot on this program, long-term unemployment is turning into a key legacy of this pandemic, especially in communities of color. And some new data from Pew shows Asian Americans have been especially hard hit. In the fourth quarter of last year, almost half of Asian Americans who were unemployed had been out of work for more than 6 months. The similar figure is about 35% of Black, white, and Hispanic workers. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that story.
In January last year, when we just started hearing about a new virus spreading in China, Karen Chen at the Chinese Progressive Association started getting calls from people losing their jobs in Boston's Chinatown.
A former president was saying that it's a Chinese virus, that stigma, you know, immediately impacted a lot of the small businesses.
She says low-wage Asian American workers were being laid off before shutdowns even started. Many of them are immigrants who rely on jobs within their communities. Looking outside those communities means resumes and Zoom interviews.
And this is not in line with, you know, how actually business have done in the immigrant community.
About 60% of Asian Americans are immigrants, higher than other groups, according to Pew Research. And they tend to work in cities and industries that have been hit hard by the pandemic and shutdowns. Economist Marlene Kim researches low-wage work at the University of Massachusetts.
Asians are concentrated in restaurants, retail, and personal services like nail salons. They work in travel and leisure as porters, taxi drivers.
Those in higher earning groups, like in medicine and tech, are faring better, which means the wealth gap among Asian Americans, already the largest of any group, may get bigger, says Don Marr, professor emeritus of economics at San Francisco State. For those who are long-term unemployed,
it should have some effect on their future earnings, their future employability. That's like the scarring effect.
And he says if discrimination continues and U.S.-China relations don't improve, the economic recovery for Asian Americans leans on much more than vaccines and reopenings. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Saw this during the Great Recession as well.
Yeah, you can say that again. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 127 points, nearly 0.4%, 32,825. The NASDAQ picked up 11 points That's less than a 10%, finished at 13,471. The S&P 500 shaved off 6 points, about a 10%, 39.62. Checking some retailer stocks in light of retail sales. Dollar General dipped 0.2% today. Walmart, mostly unchanged. The people who build single-family homes are feeling a little less confident than they were a month earlier. The National Association of Home Builders / Wells Fargo Housing Market Index. Yes, that's the name of it. They just use the slash, though. They don't say it. Anyway, down a couple of points to 82 as interest rates and lumber prices are up. We told you about lumber. By the way, any index there above 50 is considered positive, so grain of salt. Bonds, the prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.62%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Manufacturing, as we have had occasion to say a couple of times in the past couple of weeks, is doing all right right now. Factory activity is at a three-year high. But there was a line in the most recent update that caught our eye. Steel prices, it said, have increased significantly in recent months. So, as we usually do when there is news on the steel desk, we've called Lisa Goldenberg. She's the president of Delaware Steel to find out what is what.
Okay, now I'm recording. Let's go. Do
excellent. It. Excellent. We're just going to jump right in. We're going to play that little bit because that's kind of you in a nutshell right there. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
How is business at the Delaware Steel Company right now?
Business is great. We are in one of those rare upswing moments. I think you and I spoke a couple times, actually, in 2018, and we're kind of there again. Things are crazy. The market is in a massive overdrive. Wow. And it's one of those rare, exciting times.
So let me ask you sort of a flip-sided question here. Number one, what are you hearing from your customers? And number two, what are you hearing from your suppliers?
Well, kind of the both for everybody. It's strong. Suppliers are making steel as fast as they can. They have what we call lead times, which is how long it takes to get to the customer. Mm-hmm. Are the longest they've been in probably 15 years. Hmm. Even though technology's improved, it's not a criticism of their production. It's just that their order books are that backed up. Yeah. On the customer side, of course, they're moaning and groaning at the prices. To the extent that they can pass it on, they do. And when they can, they sort of make the same money either way because they're passing on that margin. Mm-hmm. To the extent that they can't pass on the margin where they're locked into contracts, it's a painful time. It's not always a good time for everybody at the same time.
That all makes sense. Let me ask you back up to that thing you said about the economy really, or your industry anyway, really being in overdrive. This economy is going to heat up as everybody gets their shots and things reopen and consumers have a lot of money. How worried are you about all this pent-up demand sort of overheating things?
I'm not worried at all, Kai. I think that the economy's been going well. I think it could overheat. But when we say overheat, what do we mean? We mean inflation. Well, mm-hmm. the cost of money is so low, and all this printing money is a lot. It's huge. Yeah. But in relative terms, for the first time, we have people generating savings in this country in, what, since the 80s? Yeah. When we've talked about heating up the economy in the past, we had a lot of money sitting on the sidelines doing nothing, whether it's in consumers' pockets or whatever. We're coming from a place of people having no money.
It is so interesting to hear you say, you an actual practitioner in this economy, saying all this stuff about inflation, not worrying about it, as opposed to all the academicians and some of the policymakers saying, oh, my goodness, inflation's going to kill us.
Well, I think it's scary, but, you know, stating my age or whatever, the year I went to college, the interest rate on the money my parents, you know, put in the bank was 17% if I put it on a credit card.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've now lived for a long, long time at negligible interest.
So in a nutshell here, just to let you get back to actually running your company, you're feeling pretty good.
Things look pretty good. Yeah. I think that for my industry, this will die down somewhere in the summer because the prices are so high that imports are going to come into the country, even though we have tariffs.
Yep.
But I think that for the economy, my timing's off. We spoke right after our former president was elected. And I said the one thing that I expected was an infrastructure bill that everyone could agree on. Well, yeah. I was wrong by, you know, 4 years. Yeah. But I think we're going to get one. And I think that putting people back to work, that has to be addressed. I think that there's a line in the sand that I'm very optimistic about, very optimistic about.
Lisa Goldenberg, she runs the Delaware Steel Company. Lisa, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kai. It's been wonderful.
For decades now, the number of people in this country who smoke has been falling. Back in 1994, 25% of Americans smoked, 14% in 2019. But last year, an unusual year in a whole lot of ways, as we all know, last year, for the first time in a very long time, cigarette sales appear to have been steady. Medically and maybe socially not great, but for state budgets, a lot of them stressed by the pandemic, more smoking means more tobacco tax revenue. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more on that.
States use that money in many ways, but a lot of it actually goes toward trying to get people to stop smoking. Like this campaign from New York.
Quitting is hard, but you don't have to do it alone. You're twice as likely to.
And Florida.
I feel that I can beat anything in this world but my own cigarette habit.
And this one from Pennsylvania.
If you want help quitting your nicotine addiction, please call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. They'll help you. They help.
Tobacco taxes are one of many so-called sin taxes. States charge them on gambling and alcohol, too. They can be as low as 17 cents per pack of cigarettes to as high as $4.50. Sales of cigarettes have declined by about 3% a year, even recently, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But again, not last year. Jackson Brainard is with the National Conference of State Legislatures. He says the demand for drugs of all kinds tends to stay steady during hard times.
Saw this during the Great Recession as well. Tobacco and alcohol taxes were relatively stable. So sin taxes have played a role in keeping state budgets afloat.
New Jersey, for example, is reportedly collecting $42.1 million more dollars in tobacco tax revenue than expected. Sin tax revenue may be a small percentage of state budgets. Brian Sigritz at the National Association of State Budget Officers estimates it's in the single digits. But he says those add up.
It is an area where states often turn to during a downturn to try to bring in additional revenue. It's, you know, typically has more political support than, you know, efforts to increase some of the broad-based taxes.
Colorado and Oregon approved higher tobacco taxes in November. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, at least 24 other states are considering bills that would increase tobacco tax rates. Researcher Vaughn Reese at Harvard Center for Global Tobacco Control has been studying data from cigarette makers and convenience stores. Reese says the pandemic shutdowns may well have played a part in driving people to smoke more.
Certain experiences such as social isolation and the accompanying effects of that, that could include depression, that could include boredom, are often associated with an urge to smoke.
And part of the urge, says Reese, is because so many people aren't in regular workplaces or anywhere else where they can't smoke.
Just being confined to one's home means that people are not subject to the clean indoor air laws or the smoke-free laws that they might otherwise have to conform to.
So, what are states going to do with any extra tobacco tax revenue? Andrea Vellante, a public health researcher at the University of Vermont, says after a year grappling with a worldwide pandemic, states shouldn't be tempted to spend it elsewhere.
No, in the ideal scenario, we would be using those funds to continue driving down use and essentially eliminating that revenue stream.
But she says, like a lot of pandemic habits, an uptick in smoking may drop again once things fully reopen. Her research has found that while tobacco sales have increased, so have calls to smoking quit lines. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, which comes with the obligatory warning, caveat emptor for crying out loud, caveat emptor. Saw this on Business Insider today, that retail investors, that is basically you and me, have bought more Bitcoin so far this quarter than big Wall Street institutional investors have. About which, fine. But I will point out here that on Saturday at one point, a Bitcoin would have cost you more than $61,000. As I speak these words, $56,200. You look up volatility in the dictionary, there's a little Bitcoin symbol, I'm telling you. Also, remember, volatility works on the way down, too. All right, we got to go, but not without your moment of economic context, courtesy today of our Friday regular Heather Long of The Washington Post. Also, perhaps, a factor in the sluggish, but not great retail sales number this morning, if you remember the framing from the top of the show. Heather pointed out in the paper the other day that the Internal Revenue Service is swamped right now, dealing with, you know, taxes, but also all the variables they are having to handle because of the relief plan. And so the IRS has a backlog of unprocessed tax returns that is almost triple its usual size. So if you're looking for a refund that's late, that's why. Digital and on-demand around here is done in part by Carrie Barber, Janet Wynn, and Catherine Wiles. Star Nieves is in charge of them. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.